Medical information obtained from our website or the live show is not intended to be a substitute for professional care. If your pet has or you suspect they might have an illness or other medical condition, you should consult a healthcare provider. The opinions expressed on this radio program are not necessarily those of All Paws Pet Talk, this radio show, or their sponsors.
And now live in this studio, it's the All Paws Pet Talk call-in radio show with a valuable knowledge and expertise of our panel guests ready to take your calls. Listen for the phone number so you may call in live. Take it away, panel.
Welcome to All Paws Pet Talk. I'm Dr. Carol Osborne, your friendly veterinarian and host today. We've got a great show coming up, and our first guest today is Georgina Bradley. She is an entrepreneur, a certified professional dog trainer, and the owner of Dog Stars Training Academy all the way up in British Columbia. She's got over 25 years of experience working with animals and training them, very passionate about what she does, and not only has she trained animals for the film industry, she's also supplied and trained dogs for events just like the Vancouver 210 Olympics. She currently trains and coaches clients locally as well as worldwide. She uses positive reinforcement techniques, encourages the dogs to think, and the humans to understand how dogs communicate. Welcome, Georgina.
Well, thank you, Carol.
Well, I'm so delighted to have you with us today. What can you tell all of our All Paws Pet Talk listeners? What is it that you look for to get a dog to be a movie star?
We look for, sometimes it's a unique look could be what we're looking for. The baseline foundation behaviors like sit, lie down, come on command is really helpful as well. And also a really social dog. So a dog that enjoys meeting new people, being in new places, and has a certain level of confidence. So is happy in being in those new situations.
Now, what credentials do you use before you even start training a dog? What are your requirements?
Well, some dogs are really well trained by the owner, so we do meetings with the owner and the dog to see what kind of communication is already going on there. We do run acting classes for dogs in Vancouver, British Columbia, and all over BC to help the owner see their own dog's potential and to see how the dogs like working in that kind of genre for film.
And what traits or what characteristics of dogs in your experience are essential and required for a dog to really make it all the way to Hollywood, if you will?
Well, it's sometimes unfortunately not up to us as the trainers or the agents. It's up to the director and the also sometimes the personality of the dog. So It's we look for an outgoing dog that can listen and can perform behaviors over and over again. So a big willingness to work, a drive, and usually a willingness to have a lot of treats throughout the day, because we do train for food if the dog is motivated by that. If they're motivated by toys, it can be a little bit more challenging to get a little bit more precision out of a toy drive, but more treat-focused, food-focused puppies are ideal. That creates just a different work ethic.
And what would your basics be, you know, considering a well-trained dog? What does that dog have to meet, in your opinion, to be considered well-trained?
That's a good question. So we like to see that they have a solid sit-stay, so they know how to sit and stay still until they're told otherwise. So that could be either they're released from the position or they're told to do something else, like go put their feet up on somebody or bark at a tree or something like that. Or so solid command, so that if they're asked to sit stay, they don't do anything else until they're moved or requested to move into another realm.
What techniques do you use to get a dog to think and or to reverse a negative behavior? Can you give us an example?
Well, yeah. At Dog Stars Training Academy, we teach and promote positive reinforcement techniques. So we use clicker training. We use word markers for good behavior. So an example would be if we ask the dog to sit, as soon as they sit, we say yes, or we click, And the click indicates that the dog has done something good. And then we release them from their positions and then pay them. We pay them in the position sometimes and then also after the release word or the end of the behavior has been indicated. So we use a lot of positive reinforcement techniques. So it teaches the dogs to figure stuff out. If they don't do the behavior, no treat, no click, no yes is given. So they go, oh, okay, I guess I didn't do anything, so I don't really get any reward for that. So it teaches them to think about what they're doing to get the reward.
Exactly. And the primary rewards that you give are?
Well, we can use their own kibble is a potential. We can use more high-value treats like cookies or chicken or liver or hot dog. Sometimes we don't use people food, but sometimes hot dogs are really odoriferous for the dog. So they're, oh, that smells really good. We use beef or even cheese snacks. Like there's lots of cookies on the market, so treats are just abundant with what we can pay them with.
Right. And so is a treat the primary reward used as opposed to, love and affection or a simple pat on the head?
Well, that's a good question because when they're working in a film setting, food is an easier way to control their behavior. After they've completed a behavior, then they get lots of love and lots of praise and lots of hands-on touching. We praise them as they're doing the behaviors to let them know they're on the right track. But food is an easier way to let them know that their continued behavior. If we go in and give them love, they might get too excited because we're touching them, and then we've kind of broken their focus of concentration. But afterwards, absolutely, we love on them and kiss them and hug them and pet them and massage them in between takes. So they're getting a lot of a balance of good things. Some dogs are toy motivated, so we can get them to work for a toy, and then after they're working, we'll play with them and let them have a little play time too.
And what are some of the A-list talents that you have brushed elbows with?
Well, there's been a menagerie of films that I've been involved in. Some recent ones are Marmaduke, 101 Dalmatians was ages ago. So we have like the A-list stars like Glenn Close and Jeff Daniels that I've worked with, and they were amazing, amazing talent to work with. I helped out on a film called iRobot, so I was able to work with Will Smith with one of our kitties. The cat has such a small role in it, and it unfortunately didn't get a whole. I don't think the kitty even got a credit on that film, but we did some amazing work with a cat doing a bunch of stunts with Mr. Smith, and he was an amazing talent to work with. He was great.
Well, that's fabulous, and we are getting ready for a station break, but we are going to come right back with Georgina Bradley of Dog Stars Training Academy, and she's going to tell us about some of the films and the Hollywood movie star dogs that she has worked with and share more tips on how you can train your dog to be as well understood as a Hollywood pup. I'm Dr. Carol Osborne, your host today on All Paws Pet Talk, and we are going to be right back after this commercial break, and we're going to talk a little more about training your dog to go to Hollywood.
Treat your furry best friend with a clear conscience. Clear Conscience Pet, that is. Everything made by this family-owned company is artisan-crafted in the USA. From family-farmed ingredient sources, holistically formulated for your pet's best health. And just plain delicious. Their treats, chews, and the amazing super gravy food topper for dogs and cats are simply the best you can buy. And the company has won 5 National Nutrition Awards to prove it. Now, Clear Conscience Pet is launching the Sliders brand, a true breakthrough in meaty treats featuring the purest tender meat treat ever made. No grain, no gluten, no glycerin or other chemicals found in typical moist treats. Sliders are pub fun snacks made from lean meats, nutritionally optimized with omega-rich organic flax and veggies. Enter the offer code RADIO at checkout and save 20% at clearconsciencepet.com. Your pets will love you for it.
Welcome back to All Paws Pet Talk. I'm your host today, veterinarian Dr. Carol Osborne, and I am delighted to be talking with Georgina Bradley, an entrepreneur, certified professional dog trainer, and the owner of Dog Stars Training Academy. And we were just talking about some of the dogs that she has trained that have successfully made it into Hollywood films. And Georgina, tell me a great story about a dog that you got into a film and something that our viewers would just love to hear about.
Oh, sure. Well, there's been a couple of Chihuahuas that came into some puppy classes many years ago, and we taught them how to sit and lie down and come and walk nicely on leash to be good household pets for their owners. And the owners were, I think they worked in the film industry, if I'm not mistaken. Then they came back for some acting classes. So we brought these two little Chihuahuas who were brought in not from a breeder but from a rescue society when they first started to show up. And so these Chihuahuas were quite sensitive. So bringing them into the acting classes, they learned some acting behaviors. They learned how to be more confident. They learned to have fun when training. And then we had a casting call for some Chihuahuas for a film called Space Buddies. And it's a film that's a bunch of puppies that travel around, and they have a lot of adventures. It's put on by Disney. And these Chihuahuas, I sent in the photos of them, and they were cast for a part in the film where they came to set. We did 2 days of filming with them, and they did fantastic. They had to dress up in little Mexican ponchos and sit on a table, and well, all this action was happening around them, and they did fantastic. And the owners were delighted.
Well, so how much money can a dog make in a day as a movie star?
Well, it really depends on the production's budget. So it depends if it's a photo shoot or an event, a live event, or a movie production. So the gauge or the range is anywhere between $50 a day to about $300 a day. And also that depends on their experience and their talent and what they're required to do.
And how long does it usually take you as far as training a dog and getting him ready for, you know, let's say 101 Dalmatians or one of those great Hollywood films? How many hours, weeks, days, or months do you actually spend training and prepping these dogs to get them ready for the job?
Well, right before filming, we're in intense preparation. So they're typically working 5 to 6 days a week, and those aren't full days. They're just they're days where we go in and work them through their scenes and prep them for certain actions and behaviors. So again, it depends on the complexity of what the behaviors are going to be. If I would say maybe a week or two before we go to camera is a good baseline for an animal that has to work every day in the film. If it's just a small part, then maybe a day or two, maybe a couple of hours a day would be helpful.
And what is the best job that Dog Stars has landed to date?
Well, I think that working in around our the world athletes that came into Vancouver for the 2010 Olympics was an amazing experience. It was a live event where we supplied a team of Huskies to pull a sled and bring one of the talents for an opening ceremony into the arena, and it was We had a lot of prep, but a very little amount of time actually in the venue. The dogs did amazingly well, and just being in that environment was exceptionally, it was an experience of a lifetime for everybody involved, the team of trainers that came out to work it. We did three different events and three different live shows, and they all were really well received and loved, and the animals, they loved it. They loved being on stage. They loved all the attention, and it was just a memorable time, once-in-a-lifetime experience.
It sounds like a lifetime experience for sure. Now, for all of our pet-loving listeners out there, even if you've got a pet who's not going to end up on the big screen, why is it important to have a well-trained pet?
Well, it's having an animal that listens to you and is able to be safe. So you want your pet to be around for a long time, and an animal that's under control when you're at the park is a is a delight to have. If they're running around and you're calling them and they're not listening, they could, you know, inadvertently run into traffic or run at a dog that might not be friendly. So having the basic control over your animal will help you enjoy them much more than the other side of it. And there are some studies that for humans that, you know, if it's increased stress level for too much excitement or too much stress, it impacts our immune system. So I think that can definitely impact our animals too if they're too excited or too stressed or too scared. And training can bring out more confidence and more understanding from them because we're basically teaching them a different language.
Sure.
So having them understand us is great.
You know, absolutely. And what do you think, what are some of the biggest mistakes that pet owners make when they try to train their dogs, you know, at home without your help?
That's a good question. Sometimes I see that animals get more attention for doing unwanted behaviors, such as jumping on the counter or picking up things or, you know, inappropriate behaviors. They get a lot of attention for that. So when they're being good, we kind of forget to give them the love and the attention they need for rewarding all those good behaviors. So when they're nice and calm, give them the love and the attention rather than when they're being a monkey, they get more attention that way.
Right. So one of the problems that many pet owners face is when the dog makes a mistake, whether it's, you know, potty training in the house or whatever it might be, that they get upset. And even just by raising your voice and acknowledging the accident or the misbehavior, they're inadvertently reinforcing what we would call a negative behavior. Would you say that's correct?
Yeah, that's right. And with teaching them all the good things we want, so when they go outside to do their bathroom break, we want to have a little party out there with them and tell them that's awesome and tell them that that's way better than not than doing it inside. So yeah, it's creating a balance of rewarding all the good behaviors rather than rewarding the non-good behaviors.
Exactly. And I'm Dr. Carol Osborne, your host today on All Paws Pet Talk Radio. We're talking to Georgina Bradley of dogstars.ca, all the way from British Columbia. We're going to take a short break, and we're going to be right back with a little bit more of All Paws Pet Talk.
For your dogs, running beside your bike is more rewarding canine exercise than any walk. It's also more dangerous. Until now. Introducing the amazingly stable Bike Toe Leash, the only safe dog biking attachment approved by the American Pet Association. The Bike Toe Leash installs in seconds on bikes, trikes, power chairs, and mobility scooters. No tools needed, and dogs learn it immediately. With a Bike Toe Leash, both dogs and rider can enjoy fun recreation anywhere, no matter what your ability level. To learn more and order your Bike Toe Leash, visit BikeToeLeash.com. That's BikeToeLeash.com. Bike Toe Leashes are made in the USA and ship worldwide. That website again is BikeToeLeash.com.
Welcome back to All Paws Pet Talk Radio. I'm your host today, Dr. Carol Osborne, and I am chatting with Georgina Bradley, certified professional dog trainer and owner of Dog Stars Training Academy, all the way in British Columbia. And Georgina, welcome back.
Thank you.
And what are some of the biggest problems that you see, you know, pet owners having as to why they call you and seek your services?
Well, on the obedience side, we see a lot of difficulties with people with their dogs when they're trying to walk on leash. So their dogs are either pulling or not paying attention or wanting their own, you know, to do their own thing, like sniffing and things like that.
And how would you correct something like that?
Yeah, well, something to consider is how dogs normally walk, and something that doing some research and understanding doggy behavior, dogs' natural ambling speed is about 8 miles per hour, and people's natural ambling speed is between 2 to 3, maybe 4 miles per hour. So dogs actually walk twice as fast as we do. So we have to teach them to slow down. So when they start to pull, we need to stop walking and either call them back to us or change direction or wait for them to relax the leash and then we start to go. Also, we need to teach them to stop with us. So it's not just a bonding exercise when you're walking, but when you walk, you want to stop and see if they stop with you. If they stop with you, that's awesome. You want to pay them for that. Reward them with some praise and maybe even a treat to really solidify that that's something you want to see more of. And then the dog will start to go, oh, I think they want us to slow down. I think they want us to stop with them, rather than always be kind of pulling on the leash.
Well, and is there a special kind of leash and or collar or a particular length that you can recommend, to dog owners to, avoid having a problem like this or to correct a problem that they may in fact already have?
Well, sometimes changing the piece of equipment can rectify this. If they're pulling on the regular collar, you might want to switch to a harness that clips on the front. So the Sensi harness or the Easy Walk harness both clip on the front of the chest. I want to encourage people to try to avoid the harnesses that clip on the back, because that is teaching them to be little mini huskies if they're not already a husky. Huskies want to pull when they feel that harness push on their chest, so it's that opposing force type of feeling. If they're using a harness, maybe try switching back to a regular collar. It's the dog feeling like they're getting used to the equipment is how they innately feel like they should be pulling. So if they're pulling with a collar, switch to a harness. If they're pulling with the harness, maybe switch to a collar.
And with respect to a leash, is there a certain length of a leash that's ideal, for example, to walk a dog on versus to have a training session with?
Great question. So, the equipment is important. So in training a dog to not pull on leash, I want to encourage people to use either a 4-foot or a 6-foot leash that you can manage comfortably. If you do have a big pulling dog on your hands, a leather leash is even more comfortable for you. It tends to slip less when it's in your hand as opposed to an acrylic or a nylon leash. Also, to try to avoid any extendable leashes. The extendable leashes, they have a recoiling system that coils out and recoils back in, so there is a constant pressure on the collar or harness or any apparatus that is attached to the leash. So the dog is always feeling like they should be pulling a little bit everywhere. And when they feel like they're pulling a little bit to go places, they're getting rewarded for that such behavior. So when we take away that constant feeling of pulling, then we teach them that pulling doesn't get them places.
And what do you think about those collars? They're like metal collars, and they've got those big prongs in them, and you sometimes see people using them on, some of the bigger bodied type dogs. Are those helpful? Are those, they look painful and kind of nasty to me as a veterinarian.
Yeah, the prong collars, they look like it's a whole bunch of teeth, around the dog's collar. So any kind of training device is some of those training devices, they make it uncomfortable for the dog to pull. So when the dog pulls, it's uncomfortable. If they're used appropriately, they can help. But however, anything that makes the dog uncomfortable to pull should be just used to retrain this behavior, and then it needs to go away. So even like a training collar, as otherwise known as a choke chain, if that's used to fix a pulling behavior or any kind of behavior similar to the prong collar, it's a negative feeling for when it makes it uncomfortable for the dog to pull. So once they know that they're not supposed to pull, then we put them on a different device, like a flat collar, and see if they can transfer that information. So it's more like just it's a training aid, and then it goes away. And if it's constantly needing to be used, then it might not be as effective as its intention.
Right. And how old should a dog be before, somebody can, for example, set up a training session with you or just start training their dog in general?
Well, we start training animals in film at 8 weeks of age. And I worked with a lot of clients on a private note, privately, at puppies that are 8 weeks of age, 10 weeks of age, because there's a lot of puppy behaviors that can affect and impact how they grow up and how they play and how they walk and how well they listen. So training them at a young age is, I think, it's helpful. Getting them involved in a puppy class, definitely after their second set of vaccines at 12 weeks, is great to have them socialize with other dogs, learn how to play appropriately, and also learn some basic behaviors so you can practice at home and outside.
And what are some of the things that you might see in an 8-week-old puppy that would, you know, give you a key as to, you know, where that puppy's going to end up, or, you know, what type of potential that puppy might or might not have?
So when training them, we look for that work ethic I mentioned earlier on. Is, are they willing to work? Do they have a willingness to do behaviors over and over again? There's the working breeds that have a little bit of a higher drive to work, like Labs and Border Collies, Golden Retrievers, German Shepherds. They have a high working drive because they're working dogs. But there's also little dogs that love to work too, like Chihuahuas, Maltese, Dachshunds, any kind of mixed dog. Like, there's, every dog has that work ethic. So I think it's similar to how the pack dynamic shows up in a litter of, say, 6 puppies. There's going to be the really outgoing dog, and then there's going to be the dog that sits at the back. So the ones in the middle may be a little bit more easily trained. The one in the back, he's going to be a little bit more reserved and a little bit more contemplative in deciding if he wants to do stuff. The one at the front, he's going to be really excited all the time. So it's finding that dog that works for you and that you can connect with and that suits your energy level as well.
Exactly. Now, what about cost? What do you charge people for a training session or a private, you know, type of session? How does that work?
So private sessions in people's homes, when we set something up, it's usually an hour and a half, and it's $120 for an hour and a half, where we go through behaviors or concerns that the owner may have or that the puppy or adult dog is showing up with. And we give them tips and tools to work with right away so that they can start practicing. If they decide to take a group class down the road, those start at $140 for 6 weeks for 1 hour per week. Now, the acting classes are a more specialized class, and the group classes I just mentioned are 6 weeks long. The acting classes are usually 5 weeks long, cover 3 to 5 behaviors per class, and they're $175 for 5 weeks for 1 hour. And those classes are so much fun. The owners love to see their dogs get the film behaviors, such as go to a mark, wave, shake a paw, lick their lips on command, shake their head, crawl, nudge things, scratch at things, as long as they're comfortable with having their dog show up with these behaviors. So there's always an air of caution when asking your dog to speak on command, because we don't want to open that door if we can't close it, sort of thing.
Exactly. Georgina, for all of our Pet Talk loving listeners, can you tell them how they can get a hold of you?
Sure. You can contact us through our website. It's www.dogstars.ca, that's dogstars.ca, or you can give us a call. Our area code in beautiful British Columbia is 604-878-7827. That number is 878-STAR. Easy to remember.
Very easy to remember. Georgina, thank you so much. It was a wonderful, informative segment. And for all of you pet-loving listeners out there, if you've got a dog that you want to get to Hollywood, Georgina Bradley is where you need to go. I'm your host today, veterinarian Dr. Carol Osborne. We welcome pet owners to call us with questions, and we also offer consultations. We're available toll-free at 1-866-DR-CAROL, and that's 1-866-372-2765. For all you pet-loving listeners out there, if you've got questions about your pet, we're going to be here every Thursday answering your questions and giving you all kinds of great information. You can visit us online at allpawspettalk.com. You can also visit me online, www.drcarol.com. And we've got lots of great articles, information, and all kinds of anti-aging pet tips on our blog at carolonpets.com/blog. I'm Dr. Carol Osborne, and we'll be back next week with more great pet stories on All Paws Pet Talk Radio.
Hey, pet lovers, please listen up. I want to introduce to you Nature's Logic, the most natural full-line pet food ever made, and here's why. Nature's Logic is made with a variety of high-quality proteins, such as beef, chicken, lamb, and venison. You will never find any synthetic vitamins, minerals, or anything else synthetic in Nature's Logic. Only real nutritional foods, such as dried blueberries, apples, carrots, cranberries, spinach, and almonds. Foods loaded with natural vitamins and minerals, as made by nature, not a chemist. Nature's Logic is committed to providing the highest quality and safest nutrition for the furry members of your family. So, folks, here's what I want you to do. Visit the Nature's Logic website at naturslogic.com and find a store near you. Nature's Logic can be found in many independent stores throughout Colorado, New Mexico, and Wyoming. So, do your pets a favor and start feeding them Nature's Logic and treat them to the very best. Nature's Logic is truly 100% natural, the way pet foods should be.
Get in on the fun and the rewards of caring for animals as a professional. Train to be a pet groomer or a veterinary assistant at the Florida Institute of Animal Arts. Turn your love for animals into a lifelong career. There are thousands of jobs in the growing professions of pet groomer and veterinary assistant. We help place graduates. Ask about tuition financing. The Florida Institute of Animal Arts, Winter Park, 407-869-PETS. On the web at myfiaa.com.
Welcome back to All Paws Pet Talk Radio. I'm Dr. Carol Osborne, your host today, and we are going to talk with Dr. Don Kampfer, veterinarian, all the way from Florida. Hello, Dr. Kampfer.
Hello, Dr. Osborne. How are you today?
Well, I'm great, and you know, people and pets are all out there getting ready for the big Easter holiday, and I thought it might be a great time for you to help our pet owners brush up on their Easter time pet IQ holiday tips. What can you tell us?
Well, probably depends a good part on where you live. Actually, down here in Florida today, we've just set a record cold temperature the last 2 days down here in the Daytona Beach area where I live. So the cold weather tips probably pertain as much to the south right now as they do up north. But, you know, holiday time, people travel, they do take their pets with them, and of course, eating is, you know, one of the highlights of any holiday season. And you got to watch out because, you know, sudden changes in diet, things that their animal's not exposed to, taking them to relatives' houses, homes away from home, things they're not familiar with, you know, opens up a whole host of problems. And let's not forget our pets that are on medications, animals with metabolic diseases like diabetes. And over the holiday time, just like us, it's real easy to get off schedule.
And what about snacks and treats and, you know, sharing some of the bones from the turkey dinner? What's your thought on that?
Well, it keeps veterinarians rich, you know. Keeps us, makes a few boat payments for us. As the old car talk guys used to joke about that.
Right. You know,
seriously. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, you know, I talk to people all the time, and they're always telling me they're feeding this kind of a bone and that kind of a bone, and it's a raw bone or it's a frozen bone. And every time I hear that, I cringe. And what's your feeling on that? I mean, I feel that bones can splinter and lacerate, you know, the intestines and cause all kinds of problems. What do you say to a pet owner?
The old story, you know, the lacerating the bones, puncturing through the intestines, you know, you probably realize, you know, professionally we actually see a lot less of that than what people would think. It does happen. I'm not going to say it doesn't, but it's not near as common as one would think. But, yeah, my rule of thumb, you know, the advice I've given my clients for the last 30 years is any bone that your animal can splinter is not a safe bone. Bones that they can gnaw on, they can chew the meat off of it, nibble on them, carry them around, play with them, they're relatively safe. But any bone that you have a pet that's large enough, obviously a bone that a pit bull can break, is probably going to be safe for something, you know, maybe the size of a small terrier or a beagle or a lap dog. So you have to use a little bit of common sense. You know, a bone that your animal can chew on, gnaw on, perhaps play with, but not splinter, is a safe bone. Shards can get caught in the mouth, caught in the teeth, they get caught in the palate, they can get caught in the esophagus, they can get, of course, generally by the time they hit the stomach acids will begin to, you know, take their action on them. We don't see a lot of perforations from bones, but we do see a lot of constipation, a lot of digestive upsets, vomiting, that sort of thing. So use a little bit of common sense. If your animals are used to bones and they've never had problems with them before, that's fine. Just judge the size of the bone and the brittleness of the bone in relationship to your animal's mouth size and their biting strength.
And what about those Easter baskets? What about chocolate, for example? I mean, everybody loves chocolate, and cats love chocolate too. But what's the deal on that? You're always hearing about chocolate, and it's so toxic. What's your feeling on that?
Well, animals, you know, I will confess to the fact that, you know, even my own dogs, I have enjoyed a little chocolate treat every now and again. How bad the chocolate is for your animal, again, depends on their size. It's pretty much a ratio of the amount of chocolate relative to the animal's body weight. And, of course, the more pure the color, the coffee, the chocolate is, the more cocoa is in it, the more lethal it is. The dark chocolates or the baker's chocolate, obviously, are more toxic than the diluted or the milk chocolates. So it's all relative. You know, one Hershey's Kiss to a German Shepherd is not going to cause any appreciable damage, whereas, you know, two Hershey's Kisses to a little 3-pound Chihuahua can result in symptoms. So you got to use a little bit of common sense. If your animal wants to lick the chocolate ice cream off the spoon, probably nothing's going to happen. You want to give your dog a half of a dark Hershey's chocolate bar? Probably not.
And what about, you know, the decorations and the candles and the cooking? What tips can you share with our pet loving listeners?
Well, those are usually sources of very interesting foreign bodies. You know, at the very least, your animal may get some digestive upset, a little bit of vomiting, a little bit of diarrhea, a little bit of upset for a few days, and in worst case scenario, you're going to get some intestinal obstructions, and you know they can be anything from just obstipation or constipation that can resolve with medical treatment to full-blown intestinal perforations or blockages that require surgical intervention. Worst-case things, you know, if you're making roast, the strings that they put around the roast, the animal doesn't know it's string. It just smells and tastes like meat, and they will swallow those things, cats as well. Linear foreign bodies from those things are fairly common. The plastic wrappings, you know, that plastic cellophane absorbent material that they put in a lot of the Easter baskets. I've never seen too many animals eat them, but occasionally you will get them. And those long, thin strands of mylar or nylon or plastic that they use, you know, they can cause intestinal blockages. And if they're long enough to get, you know, linear foreign bodies, which have a sawing effect through the intestine, as the intestine increases its contractions trying to force this thing through, they literally act like a saw wire and will saw through the lining of the intestine, and then, of course, you end up with peritonitis or worse. So you need to be careful with these things around animals over the holiday time. Some of the things we don't give a second thought to, a curious animal can find very, very tempting.
And what would the signs be that a pet owner might look for if their pet had inadvertently gotten into something, be it a candy wrapper or the thread from the turkey? What would be initial signs somebody, you know, might look for?
Well, most of the time, of course, you know, assuming we're dealing with cats and dogs, which are our most common pets, animals that can vomit, the first thing you're going to notice is vomiting. You know, an animal will first attempt to clear up something. If it can come up, sometimes little traces of the tin foil or stringy material in the vomit can give you a clue as to what the animal was chewing on, sometimes some bone fragments, sometimes, you know, whatever, eggshells if they got into the Easter eggs or the garbage. But then the vomiting will very quickly progress into anorexia as the animal loses its appetite, and then, of course, they become dehydrated. And the next thing you know, 2 or 3 days later, you've got a pretty desperately sick animal. But the first thing to watch out for, especially if you think your animal's been exposed to things around the home that it should not have been, is vomiting. You know, mild cases of vomiting, sometimes limiting the animal to water and just don't feed it for 24 hours. It's amazing how many things will pass on their own. And if they don't, you know, your animal vomits for more than 24 hours, it needs to see a veterinarian ASAP.
Absolutely. You know, in fact, pet gastritis or inflammation of the stomach was the number one ranked pet emergency condition last year, costing pet owners an average of $3,000 per case. So that's a great reason to make sure you dot your I's and cross your T's this Easter weekend so that your pet doesn't unfortunately end up in an emergency facility. Well, I am talking with Dr. Don Kampfer, veterinarian, optimal, all the way from Delray Beach, Florida. And we're talking about all the tips and things that you need to remember to have a wonderful Easter holiday with your friends and keep your pets safe at the same time. I'm Dr. Carol Osborne, your host today. For pet listeners out there, if you have a question that you'd like us to address on air, you can log on to our site at allpawspettalk.com. For pet listeners that might like to talk to me, I'm Dr. Carol Osborne. You can call our office toll-free at 1-866-372-2765. You can also visit us online at www.carolonpets.com. Now, we're coming up on a commercial break, but we're going to be right back with veterinarian Dr. Don Kampfer and some more great pet information for all of our pet-loving listeners. I'm Dr. Carol, and we are going to be right back with All Paws Pet Talk.
When it comes to health expenses, dog owners have it rough. Now, thanks to veterinarian and dermatologist Dr. Kristen Holm, your dog can be goo healthy. There's Doggy Goo to fight environmental pet allergies, Goo Gut Rescue for rescuing your dog's gut health, and Goo Silver, a broad-spectrum supplement for the special needs of your senior varsity dog. So visit HealthyGoo.com today or call 855-246-2426, and your dog can be healthy goo healthy.
Does your dog have muddy, dirty paws? Well, here's your answer. The Paw Wash cleans dog's paws fast and easy. Just insert your dog's paw and leg into the device and pump up and down. The Paw Wash's unique hourglass design creates a suction of power that pulls that dirt, mud, sand, or salt off the paw and leg, and it stays in the device. You can clean all four paws in a little over a minute with just one fill. For retail or online sales, go to www.thepawwash.com. That's www.thepawwash.com.
Welcome back to All Paws Pet Talk Radio. I'm your host today, Dr. Carol Osborne, and we are talking with veterinarian Dr. Don Kampfer, all the way from Delray Beach, Florida. And before we start talking with Dr. Kampfer, I just wanted to give my pet-loving listeners a little tip. Procter & Gamble has done a very quiet, silent recall of Iams Shakeables Turkey and Lamb Dog Treats. Now, these treats are being sold in a 6-ounce can, and they're being recalled because of mold growth. So they, Procter & Gamble has issued a recall of select lots. You can visit those lots at the fda.gov/recall, or you can contact Procter & Gamble directly at 877-894-4458. So stay away from Iams Shakeable Turkey Dog Treats as well as Iams Shakeables Lamb Dog Treats. And now Dr. Kampfer is back with us. Hello, Dr. Kampfer.
Hello, Dr. Osborne.
Well, you know, we were just talking a few minutes over the break, and you were telling me that your niece was just showing you a picture of her brand new puppy on Facebook. And since a lot of people probably have puppies right now, I thought we could share some puppy tips with people. And what is the best time when you get a new puppy, Dr. Kampfer? When should you bring that new puppy to the vet and why?
Well, the best time to bring it to the puppy is generally as soon as you get it. Because your veterinarian is trained to spot little subtle signs of impending problems and disease processes in the very early stages before the average person would realize there's something wrong. And in the case of a little puppy, you know, sometimes even hours can make a big difference between, you know, saving the dog and losing it, or a very minor veterinary expense as opposed to a, you know, very big veterinary expense. Particularly, you know, some of your toy breed dogs, you know, they can go south on you in a hurry. Little puppies don't have a lot in the bank as far as body reserves go. And, you know, one day without eating or 2 days without eating can put them into some dire straits. They can dehydrate very quickly. They can become hypoglycemic. That's where their blood sugar levels just drop so low, just like a person that goes into a diabetic coma. And, you know, caught early, it's easily treatable. If you wait till it's too late, you may not be able to save that animal. So I would tell people when you get your animal, take it to the vet as soon as you can. Ideally, you know, if you get a thing that's over a weekend or over a holiday, sometimes there's a 1 or 2 day lag period before you can, but I would say the very first opportunity you get. And another precaution I give all of my clients is remember that puppies are like children, and when you see your vet, you start them on their immunizations and vaccinations and things. Just like children, most puppies need a series of booster shots when they're little. And usually they're given at approximately a 3 week interval. Each vet may have a little different, different take on that. But the average is usually around every 3 weeks until that dog's around 14 weeks of age. And it's important to remember until about 2 weeks after that final booster shot at 14 weeks of age, your dog really does not have any appreciable amount of immunity against diseases. And I tell all my clients, I try to drive the point home, until that dog is finished with all its immunizations and you're sure that, you know, your vet gives you the go-ahead that it's okay, keep it away from places where other dogs like to congregate. You know, the first tendency, I guess it's pretty natural. Everybody wants to take the dog, take it around to the neighbors, take it for a walk, take it to the doggy park, show it off, let it make friends with all the other dogs in the neighborhood, see if they're going to get along and how they're going to play. And while it may be very cute and it's good from a socialization standpoint, it is not good from a disease prevention standpoint, because while your neighbor's dogs and dogs, even existing dogs in the home, they've already had their shots, they've already been around the block a few times, they've got immunity to diseases. Your little puppy does not, and they can very easily, and they can and will, get sick on you. So you want to keep puppies away from places where other dogs congregate, you know, dog walks, dog parks, walks along the roadsides. Keep them around your home, just with your existing family, your existing pets, until you are sure that they've had all the shots they need to have.
And what are the most important? Oh, go ahead, Dr.
I'm sorry. No, usually, well, important things are, you know, the distemper parvo shots, because parvo can be devastating, particularly in young puppies. We don't see a lot of the other traditional vaccines that are in the traditional diseases that are in the vaccine, and with good reason, because most people have been, and veterinarians have been so diligent about getting dogs vaccinated in these last years. We don't see a lot of the old hepatitis and distemper and diseases that used to ravage dogs back in the 50s and 60s. Those are pretty rare diseases anymore, exactly because people are much more mindful of getting their pets vaccinated today. Parvo, unfortunately, is still very much with us. We do see a lot of that. And like I said, it can be devastating to a young puppy. Another area people also overlook is parasites. The vast majority of puppies and kittens in this country are born with parasites already inside them. The parasites migrate into the fetuses when they're still inside the mother's womb. And a lot of these dogs are either born with them or they become infected, you know, right at birth or shortly after birth. And people bring these puppies home, and, of course, they have the dog home around the house for 3, 4, 5 days before they take it to the vet. Sometimes the weather's not good. The feces accumulate out in the yard. Sometimes children are entrusted with letting the dog out. And the worst thing you can do is let a new puppy's feces accumulate out in your yard until you have a veterinarian evaluate it. Because we see roundworm infestations are on the rise, hookworm infestations. These are transmissible to humans. In fact, they can be quite dangerous in humans. So you want to make sure, in addition to keeping your puppy around your home, clean up the droppings. Every time a new puppy goes out to the bathroom, an adult, responsible adult, or responsible older teenager should be with the dog. Scoop up the feces, dispose of them in the trash. Don't leave your dog droppings out in the yard if it's going to rain, and never hose their droppings down into the yard. That's a real good way to spread the parasites deeper into the soil, and it makes getting rid of them much, much harder.
You know, I've heard that people can use lime, you know, when it's nice and sunny outside, to try to disinfect an area in the yard, for example, that you know, may be infested with eggs. Is that something that you've found effective, or do you have any other thoughts on what people might use to, you know, clean up areas that are soiled with feces?
Well, it depends on what parasite they're being soiled with. Most of your protozoal parasites like Giardia and Pitsidia are fairly easily killed with a lot of your common disinfectants, and they are subject to the ultraviolet rays of the sun and drying and freezing. Hookworm larvae, once they hatch, can be killed with a variety of things. Chlorine bleach kills them, except you can't use it on your vegetation because it'll kill the lawn areas as well. Unfortunately, we get into the case of roundworms and whipworms. Those eggs that they hatch, you can't see the worms. The worms themselves are live inside the animal. They generally don't emerge. And the eggs are microscopic. Most people aren't aware their pet is infested with them. And the eggs from these parasites are encased in an impermeable capsule. And these things can resist pretty much anything known to mankind for upwards of decades. And once they're in the soil, there's really no way to get rid of them except to replace the soil around the home with a bulldozer. Or the soil can be flamed with with some kind of a torch like the roofers use to melt the tar on the roof. You can burn them off. But I tell people, once your soil is infested with roundworms, it's infested for many, many years, and there's really no way to get rid of
it. Wow. Now, Dr. Camphor, if any of our pet-loving listeners out there would like to contact you, how can they find you?
Well, we don't have our website up running yet, but I am able to be contacted through the All Paws Radio Network. If you just go on to All Paws Pet Talk, I'm listed there as one of the show veterinarians, and of course I can, any email messages can be forwarded to me. I am in the phone book here in Florida, but of course people who reside outside of Florida would have a hard time getting consultation from me.
And what's the most important thing somebody can do to puppy-proof their home?
Ah, that's a tough one. It's amazing. Puppy-proofing homes is not quite as hard as monkey-proofing and raccoon-proofing, but it can be difficult. They can chew through all kinds of things. Biggest thing to watch out for is human medicines. You mentioned before the number one claim. I read recently that the number one cause of poisonings that are reported to the 1-800 pet poison hotline is ingestion of human medication. So you want to make sure the human what?
Hello? You are absolutely right. Make sure that all human medications are in a cabinet up high, well out of the reach of your pet. I'm Dr.
Camphor.
I'm sorry, Dr. Camphor. I think I missed you. We've just got a few seconds left in our show, and we're going to have Dr. Camphor join us in the weeks to come and talk about more great dog and cat health care tips. I'm your host today, Dr. Carol Osborne with All Paws Pet Talk Radio. If you have questions about your pet that you'd like us to address on air, please just log on to our website at allpawspettalk.com. Give us your name, give us your question, and chances are you'll hear it on the air next week. If you'd like to reach me, I'm Dr. Carol Osborne. I'm available online at carolonpets.com, and we welcome calls and offer consultations at our office. We're at 866-372-2765. I'm your host today, Dr. Carol Osborne, and we'll be back next week with another great segment on All Paws Pet Talk Radio.